Hades is a game where you will learn as you play, and we strongly recommend experiencing your early runs on your own to enjoy everything without spoilers for the first time. This podcast will assume you have reached the final boss, unlocked all the weapons, and met all the characters. Any additional spoilers will be disclosed in the episode. Thanks for tuning in. Hello and welcome to Hidden Aspects, a podcast about Hades. I'm your host, Ridiculous Hat, and this week we are joined by community heartthrob, voice of our favorite characters, Courtney Vinaeus. Courtney, how are you?
Hi, Hat. I'm great. I am wrapped in a nice cozy little blanket right now. I've got a cup of tea, and I'm excited to be here to chat about Hades.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's nice to have a celebrity here in the show. I guess the second celebrity we've had Haley on before, so you know.
No, we can call me the first celebrity.
That's a deal.
It's fine.
I'll make sure to let them know. So we'll be getting to know Courtney in a bit if you don't know her already, but you can also get to know everyone by following our social media accounts. Follow us on whatever podcast platform you like. Check us out at Hidden Aspects on Twitter and join our Discord. Link is in the show notes. All right, Courtney, let's get to know you a little bit more. Tell us a bit about yourself before we get to the acting stuff, before we get to Hades specifically. Tell us a bit about your background with gaming in general.
Okay, well, first of all, I just want to say that the celebrity thing was a joke. I want to be very clear that I do not view myself as a celebrity. And Haleyan is definitely more of a celebrity than I am. With that said, my relationship with gaming, I did not grow up a gamer. My parents were not interested in getting me any kind of console. I did not have, like a Sega or any Nintendo or anything. Because one, my family just like could not afford that. And two, even if they could afford it, and wanted me and my brother to have a gaming console, we probably would have broken it or just like fought a whole bunch over it. And they were not interested in that. My very first console I got when I was 17 years old, it was a gift from a friend and it was a Sega Genesis. And that friend just felt bad that I never grew up with video games at all. And I was definitely the friend who'd go over to friends' houses and try to play with them, but I just could not keep up because I didn't have the skill set. I didn't have the practice hours in. I got games like Boogerman, the X-Men games, Echo the Dolphin. So that was the first like console I ever had. And this would have been in like 2003. But I did play games on the computer. My parents viewed the computer as like a tool of education. They viewed it as like important technology. So I could get away with playing games on the computer. And again, because I didn't necessarily know what games to play, the games I learned about were games that I would discover at friends' houses. So I had one friend in particular whose dad played a lot of computer games. And one of those games was Myst, and one of those games was Doom. So I remember going to a Fry's Electronics with my dad, and I was probably like 11, and seeing Doom there and being like, Dad, please, can I have this? Like I've played it at Jesse's house. Jesse's allowed to play it. Please let me have this. And my dad was sort of like, not, you know, totally tuned in. I'm sure he like looked at the cover and was like, what? I don't know about that. But I don't want to say I'm like a daddy's girl at all. But like my dad and I, we're on like the same wavelength. Like he kind of spoiled me when we did like one-on-one things. As opposed to if I was with my mom, she would just be like, no. But I loved going to like Fry's with my dad, and I just kind of followed him around everywhere. That I'm sure he was like, okay, fine, you can have Doom. When I was like 11 years old, I played Doom, and that was the first game I ever finished. I also got Myst, kind of the exact same way. And Myst, I don't think I ever finished. I put a lot of hours into it, but I definitely got stuck on that submarine level because I have no ear for sound, like at all. I am not musically, which is funny, as a voice actor, you think I would be able to figure out musical notes, but I am not musically inclined at all. And you have to do a thing where you match up notes, and I just couldn't do it as a child. Those were the games I played. And it wasn't until I don't want to say recently, like I've always kind of been adjacent to video games. Like my husband, Mikey, we've been together for a very long time and he's always had like a PlayStation or an Xbox, or sometimes both. And I've sort of tagged on and, you know, either watched or like we passed the controller back and forth, or I played a couple games on my own, but I wouldn't say it wasn't until like recently that I could really say I've like gotten into games. And that was not 100% because of the pandemic. But yeah, I've played like a couple. It's more, it's not like I'm constantly looking for a new game to play. It's more like, oh, this game seems interesting. And then my ADHD kicks in and I get like so into something I can't stop. Like I can't put it down. I just get like very obsessive over it. And that's basically what happened to me with Hades. I was given, after the release, when it came out in early access on the Epic Game Store, Darren Korb sent me a download code because I worked on it. And I was like, okay, cool. I'll try to play this. We'll see, whatever. And I started playing and I was like, oh, I'm really bad at this. But how it's set up was just so, it like hooked me where it was like, okay, well, I died, but I can do this again, or I can try this, or this time I'll do this. So yeah, it, like I just couldn't put it down and I got very obsessed with it. And I was very, very bad when I first started playing. And now here we are. I've played a whole bunch. I'm very good at it. But I'm, yeah, yeah. Okay. I feel like I've talked a lot. Is that?
It's an interview. You're supposed to talk a lot. I want to hear from you.
I know. I know. That's where we are today, is I've played a lot of Hades. And I really like it. And I promise it doesn't really have anything to do with the fact that I'm in the game. Like I also did, you know, a voice in Pyre, and I have not played Pyre. This is truly like a Hades centric. I mean, I have played a little bit of Pyre, but I was really bad at it. Yeah, this is very much like a, Hades is just like a really special game that I really like to play. It has everything that you could love. Great story, beautiful art, amazing music, and lots of voice acting. So that's like my history with games.
So, and there's so many things there that we're going to touch on, but it's interesting because I wondered, if you work on a game, does that change your relationship with it to the point that maybe you would, your exposure to it in the creation process would make you want to play it less? But Hades is a pretty special thing, and it's not like you were developing the combat systems and then did the combat. You were doing part of the creative, but the systems were new to you just the same way they were new to us. It's not like you were working on, you know, does merciful ends prerequisites were not something that you were balancing. You were saying some lines, and then you went and played the game, and the game is fun. It's a fun game.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like there was still so much story left for me to uncover. There was still so much gameplay. Like I didn't know anything about the weapons or the aspects. I only knew going into it, I only knew like a little bit about the story. It's not like I saw scripts for every single character. I only saw Deusa lines and Aphrodite lines. So that was definitely motivation, where it was like, ooh, something happens with Deusa. And I want to see what it is that leads up to that. But then you have all these other characters that I didn't know anything about. Yeah. And like I said, with Pyre, I gave Tizo a voice. And it was obviously like a really beautiful game with like a really intricate story, but I just did not have the skill set to like win any of the rights that are in it. And so I kind of got, and this happens to me with a lot of games. I mean, I'm hoping that changes now, because if anything I've learned from Hades is like, if you keep doing something, you get better at it. Like you're not supposed to be good at something the first time you do it. But yeah, when I would first try to play Pyre, whenever I got to the rights, I was just like, oh, I lose. I keep losing. And I know that technically you can go through that whole game and lose every single right, and there's still going to be story and it's still going to be really fulfilling. But it didn't quite hook me the same way that Hades did. So yeah, I guess, I mean, like, I definitely tried out Pyre because I was like, oh, I worked on this and like, I know the people who made this, so I want to check it out. Like, I played a lot of Transistor. I played all of Bastion. But yeah, with Pyre, Pyre's the Supergiant's game that I've played the least. And I'm hoping to change that. I would, now that I've kind of gotten over that hurdle of like, hey, just because you aren't necessarily good the first couple times you try something doesn't mean you can't get better. I'm kind of over that. So now I'd be interested to see how I do with Pyre. But I also want to play other games that aren't just Supergiant games.
Yeah. Well, you've built your skill set as a gamer, of course, by playing Hades for a couple of years. Like, that'll teach you a lot of things about reflexes and repetition and all that. And I think that generally the experience of Pyre, I have a couple questions later in the show, but that's definitely the hidden gem in Supergiant's catalog. And I think it probably had the the least large-scale engagement, in part because it's exclusively PC, but in part because it is a little weird. It's a little bit of a weird game. I'm going to take a moment here and reflect on the wonder that is Greg Kasavin, who is a magical person. And if you had to read the entire script for Hades before you were in Hades, you would still be reading today. Like, it's... I don't know how many lines there are, but it's a lot.
I also am not totally sure how many lines it is. But yeah, it's definitely, I think it's more than a Game of Thrones novel. He just did so much writing. And that's the number one question I get asked on stream. What is like, how many lines did you record? How long did it take you to record? And I'm just two characters out of, oh God, I don't even know. Like, there's just so many characters. You got all the people who live in the House of Hades, all the gods. Like, yeah, it's so much. There's just, I think a Supergiant, more so than any other game studio that I've experienced, pays attention to like every single detail. Like nothing gets put into the game that isn't thought about. That's what it feels like. Like, every single line is so purposeful. Every single piece of art is so purposeful. It doesn't seem like anything is wasted or like glossed over. Like, every chance that they had to take something and make it a little bit better, they did. Yeah, I truly have no idea how Greg did it. And in three years, like, you know, like, Pyre came out in 2017. This was released in early access in late 2018. And then it came out, you know, in 1.0 2020. So in 3 years, he wrote a lot of like, I have no idea does he sleep? Jury's out. Like, I do not understand how. And he does. I'm pretty sure that Greg does like all of the writing, like all the narrative is 100% Greg. Like, I don't think anybody else really jumps in there.
And Pyre was not exactly light on dialogue either. That was, oh my that God. Game is, that yeah. game might be bigger than Hades. I think it's pretty close in terms of total volume, but like, it's, Pyre always feels like there is more, there's another branch to explore, because everything just branches, and the universe you end up in each run is so different.
It's so much. Yeah, the ways that Pyre gets described is wizard basketball and visual novel. And I think both are accurate, but Pyre I think it's a game that's like harder to get into unless you know that you're getting into a story with a lot of story, with a lot of reading to do. But it's so worth it. Like, I think that there's really something in that game for everyone. And I'd be really curious to see if like Pyre sales are going up now that Hades is doing so well, or if more people are just like, you know, they bought it and now they're like, oh, that's right, that's in my Steam library, and they're giving it a shot. Because I actually do not think that Hades could have been made if Pyre had not been made beforehand. I think Pyre, I know it, like, it, I mean, Pyre is like, has a lot of like critical acclaim, but I just don't think it got as much like love from, you know, people buying it or people playing it. I think most people who played it were like, this is a great game. It's just, it was like a harder game to maybe get into. I hope people realize that Pyre is, like you said, it's a gem. It's really good. And I think it really was like the step that made making Hades possible.
Yeah. And it's in the itch.io bundle for racial equality. A lot of people may not know that. They may already own it if they bought that bundle that was sold in June. It had like 1,000 games in it. Pyre's in there. So if you got that in itch.io, go check it out. So many questions I want to ask, but I want to pull back a little bit and get a bird's eye view. When did you start getting into voice acting or performing in general, I suppose?
Oh, as a kid, I was just like a little ham. Like in middle school, I was like, I want to be in like the drama classes or whatever. And I actually went to some like family, like a family friend was having like a Christmas party, and my family went, and I was just being like a little ham and like performing in front of like people and clearly just wanted attention. And there was a woman there who was an assistant to a talent manager. And she was just like, she like went over to my mom and was like, hey, is Courtney interested in like, would you be interested in like professional acting? Like, you know, going on auditions and doing like commercials and stuff. And my mom was like, I mean, like probably, but I'll talk to her. And she asked me and I was like, oh, heck yes. So I went and I had a meeting with this like manager and she signed me. And I started going on auditions and I got like agents and I wasn't originally like, heck yes, I want to be a voice actor, but I was like, I'll do anything. Like I'll do acting, I'll do modeling, I'll do voice, whatever. So I had mostly been going on auditions for like commercials and TV shows. And then my manager was like, okay, I'm sending you some tapes. Just make some tapes and like some scripts. So just like read these scripts into like a little tape recorder. And then send them back to me and I'm going to send it out to people. And I didn't really know why. I was just like, okay. And then I started getting auditions for voice acting things. And one of those things was a kids TV show called Phantom Investigators. And this would have been in like 2001, maybe two. I think it was 2001 when I booked it. And yeah, so I started going on auditions for VA work. And that was always kind of cool. And I liked it a little more because I didn't have to worry about like what I was wearing or what I looked like. Cause you just, and this was, you know, before everyone had good internet connections. So I'd still have to like drive to Burbank, go into a recording booth, record a couple of lines. Yeah. So I booked a show called Phantom Investigators and we recorded all 13 episodes. I was the protagonist of the show. Her name was Damona Prune. And the creators of it were people who had done some Nickelodeon shows. Life with Loopy was one of them. Yeah, so it was on Kids WB. It did get canceled after 5 episodes. but I think you can find all the episodes online. I actually didn't get to see most of the episodes until a couple years ago. When I was like, did this ever air? And I did find it on Vimeo, but then they were down like a couple months later. Yeah, so that was where I kind of got my start. And I just remember really liking that. I liked that I didn't have to do a costume fitting. Because like so many, if I had done like a pilot or a commercial, you have to like go and do like a costume fitting and you have to meet with like hair and makeup beforehand. And then you get to the shoot and it's just like a lot of people fussing over how you look. And when you're like a middle school, early high school aged girl, that's something you're already very self-conscious about. So there was a lot of relief when I would book something that was VA where it was just like, it doesn't matter how I look. I can just show up. I just read the lines. It's just me in the booth. And I really liked that. And also the other part about voice acting was the range of characters that I would get. Like when I went on auditions, it was always for characters who looked like me. Like you're very limited. I mean, obviously this, but like you're very limited to auditioning for characters who look specifically like you. To the point that I remember my headshots, I had long hair and then I got a haircut and I showed up to an audition and they sent me away because they're like, we're actually very specifically looking for someone with long hair. And I was like, no, okay. And every single gig that I I booked as like face acting, as like regular acting. Literally 100% of the acting gigs that I got, whether it be a commercial or a pilot, I was a cheerleader. 100% where I got cast only as a cheerleader. And I remember just being like, and I wasn't a cheerleader in real life or anything like it. I was a drama kid. I was kind of like a nerd. I liked being not like a nerd, but I liked being different. I very specifically was not interested in being a cheerleader. So it got, I mean, I was happy to be booking work, but I remember just sort of in the back of my head being like, oh, is this the only thing I'm ever going to get cast as? Is like a, like I either played like a mean cheerleader or like an idiot cheerleader. And that's not like a whole lot of range.
Not the most fulfilling roles.
It wasn't terribly fulfilling. Like, I mean, and just also being told as like a 14, 15 year old, like having that realization of like, your opportunities are limited. You can only do so much. Like, probably isn't great for your mental health or your self-esteem. So yeah, it was, that was just a thing I remember kind of thinking. So when I would do voiceover things, it was like very refreshing to be cast as anything other than like a ding-dong cheerleader or someone who was ditzy. Like the character Damona Prune was, she was also like different. She had more depth. She was like a leader. And I remember just being like, oh, I like her. And then I'd go on audition. And like, I got to do a bunch of like a little side voices in that show, like little creature voices and stuff like that. Like, and I remember just like loving that and thinking it was fun and feeling like trusted and feeling like, yes, this is the type of acting I want to do. And I also found that fulfillment in theater. Like in high school, I was always in like the school theater. There were actually two different like theater clubs at my high school. And one was called Madrigals. And that was all like the singers, the people who are good at singing, and they would put on musicals. And then there was Advanced Theater Arts. And we were like the black box theater kids who put on like a sketch show and would do like non-musical theater. And that's the group that I was in. And I found that very, like very fulfilling also. But yeah, that was like kind of an interesting thing for me to learn early on. And then I ended up stopping the professional acting later in high school because it was like conflicting with school a lot. And my manager basically got to the point where she was like, you need to choose either school or acting. Like, cause I like things would come up, like, I don't know, like if you took like an AP course, your AP test is a specific day. You cannot reschedule an AP test, basically. Like you have to be there for that test. And I remember I had a callback for an audition the day I had an AP test. And I was like, no, I'm going to, like, they should be able to take me later in the afternoon or the next day. Like I cannot skip my AP test. And that like really, my like manager like really blew a gasket on that. And I don't think it's terribly legal to tell a child that they need to choose acting over over getting an education. But I always kind of knew, like, I never went into acting being like, I am going to be a professional actor. And this is like, I'm choosing my profession right now, as like a 12-year-old. For me, and also my mom, who was not a stage mom at all, for both of us, it was supposed to just be like a cool hobby that occasionally, like, yeah, occasionally I'd miss a class for. But it's high school and you can make that up pretty easily. And as long as I kept up my grades, I could keep doing it. But I ended up dropping because my manager put me in that corner and I was sort of like, okay, it stopped being fun. It basically stopped being fun. And it really sucked to have all these adults constantly telling you, like I remember, like I would have really bad acne breakouts and my manager would like actually get mad at me. She's like, what are you doing about your skin? And I was like, I'm 15 years old. Like, what are you? Yeah.
Sounds super toxic.
Yeah, it was incredibly toxic. And my mom and I were both just sort of like, okay, this isn't fun anymore. I am having fun with other things in my life. And I remember my logic was like, I'd rather focus on school and go to college because it's harder. Like, I feel like it would be harder to go to, like, to take some time off from school and jump back into school than it would be acting, which isn't necessarily true. but either way, like, I'm happy I made that choice because I went to college and got to have that experience. And then I picked up acting again when I wouldn't say when I felt ready for it, more as like when I realized that I was missing something creatively in my life and that I missed performing a lot. And that's actually when I fell into improv, because at that time I was living in the Bay Area and there wasn't like a huge acting scene there. It's not like I could get like an agent or manager or just like pop into an acting class, but there was this little like very hole in the wall improv theater just like down the street from me, like on my way home from work basically. And I was like, you know what? I did a little bit of improv as a kid. And that sounds kind of fun. So I started doing that. And then that made me realize like I really missed performing and that I was actually pretty good at performing. And it sort of put me in this position of like, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? Like, do I want to do it working for someone else in an office where we've talked about this, but I'm very ADHD and work like sitting in an office and working like I can get it. I can get what I need to get done. But I'm not the most efficient at it.
It's uphill, right? Like, it's just a lot of effort.
Yeah. It's a lot more effort. Like for a lot of people, like getting a task done is like a straight line. And for me, it's like a whole bunch of zigzags that cross back over themselves. Because I think I can multitask and I can't multitask. Anyway, it was just sort of like, I was trying to find this fulfillment from working an office job because I felt like I had like a lot to prove. And it was a pretty high pressure job. I was managing a whole bunch of like legal contracts. And I was like, why am I doing this when I don't like doing it? And I'm probably not the best at it, when I actually am pretty good at being creative. And I was like in my 20s at that point, and I was like, now's the time to take a risk. So I, you know, started, I'd been doing improv, I'd been teaching improv. And pretty shortly after that, that's when we decided to move out of the Bay Area and move to LA and give comedy and acting more of a shot on a professional level. Oh, I should mention that I did, before moving down to LA, that is when I actually recorded Hire. I think that was like maybe like the summer before I moved, or not too, maybe like a couple months before I moved, I recorded Tizo for Hire. Yeah, and that was sort of like, oh yeah, voice acting. I'm actually like, I can do it and I like doing it. And I don't know if I hadn't been cast as Tizo and had so much fun doing it, I don't know that I would have actually tried at that point in time to do something with that professionally. So that played like a huge role. I would say, yeah, getting cast in Pyre was ultimately like the kick in the butt that I needed to focus more on being a creative person, focus on acting, and make the decision to try to make a living off of doing something that I liked doing.
So, Pyre, were games like on your radar? Did you have an agent at the time? Because it sounds like you were just kind of dropped back into, you rediscovered your passion for performing, and then you got mm-hmm. this role when you were still in NorCal, I think. So how did you yes. land that role?
Mm-hmm. I just auditioned. I knew some of the people at Supergiant. And they knew that I was into performing, and they sent me some sides to read for an audition. And I believe, okay, so I read for May. I read for, oh God, who else did I read for? Another like womanly character. And I remember being like, womanly is not my wheelhouse. And I read for Tizo. And I wasn't expecting anything. And I remember really, really struggling with like the two humanoid characters. Also, that was a very hard audition, because it was, if you know, Pyre is not spoken in English. It's all the voice acting is in another language. And so I remember the sides being like, here's the line we want you to read in this made up language. Here's what the line translates to in English so that you know kind of what you're saying. And then they gave like descriptions on how it should be read and like where the accents are on each word. And just, I was like, one, I had been very out of practice for voice acting. And two, that was like a very hard audition, probably even for like the people who have been voice acting for a long time. So I remember struggling with that. And then Tizo kind of had the same thing, but he doesn't necessarily, he's kind of like a Scooby-Doo character where you know, Scooby-Doo is like, ruh-roh, like, you know, that's supposed to be uh-oh, but he says it as like Scooby-Doo. So Tizo was doing that on top of the like little like foreign made up language. And what he's saying wasn't necessarily a direct translation to this is what he's saying so much as like, this is what this, like, he's expressing frustration right now. So I remember that being difficult, but creature-y voices kind of come more naturally to me. There's something I do all the time, like around the house. yeah. So like, I was like, okay, I can kind of try this. I'll do this. So I felt the best about the Tizo one, but I really tried for the other two and did not get casted as those roles. And it wasn't surprising and I wasn't sad, but I remember being like, I remember thinking it was fun and being like, oh, I want to practice this again. Like, I know, like, if I had maybe been in a more practiced position, I probably could have booked May. Like, I just knew that I could do it and I wanted to do it. So yeah, I got cast as Tizo and honestly, I think I did a really good job with it. I was really happy with like how that turned out and I had a really fun time working with Darren. Darren is the person who does all the directing of the voice actors in the Supergiant games. And so working with him, I think the two of us had like a great chemistry. We were really on the same page and he was very patient with me when I like struggled through lines. And so that experience was just like, was really big for me where it wasn't just like, oh, I'm like working with some friends to do some like whatever lines for a game. It was very like, oh, like they're taking this, not, it wasn't surprising, but it was like, they're taking this really seriously. This is like important for them. They're looking for something really specific. They're very good at communicating exactly what they're looking for. And I remember, yeah, I was just like, this was fun. I think I'm doing a pretty good job at this. I think I'm good at this, which is not a feeling I have about things often, you know, where it was just like, I think I actually can do this. Usually I'm a lot harder on myself. So yeah, that was sort of like, that was the kick in the butt. That was like, hey, if you want to do this, you actually have to put like time and effort and take some risks and do it. So that's kind of where it went from there. Kind of how it went from there, rather. So since moving down to LA, I've worked with like a voice coach. I've put together a reel. 2020 was supposed to be my year where I like really focused on voice stuff. When I first moved to LA, I got like really into the improv scene and got a little bit distracted by that. And then I was like, Courtney, focus. Like, yes, you love improv. Yes, you love comedy, but improv doesn't pay the bills. And so, yeah, like 2019, like late 2019 is when I started like doing the classes, putting like a little more work in. And then the pandemic happened. And the voice acting stuff kind of got put on hold again. And I had actually started doing recording for Hades well before then. So that didn't like disrupt any of that. But yeah, it was I'm really focusing on trying to get the voice acting up and running again. But it's hard during a pandemic when you live in an apartment and you have shared walls and you deal with things like gardeners outside your window like we're dealing with today. So that's what I'm figuring out right now, navigating, continuing voice acting. But in the meantime, I found another hobby and thing that I like doing and think I might actually be good at and trying to accept the fact that I might be good at it, which is streaming. So,
and don't worry, we'll get to that. You are good at it, by the way.
No.
We'll get to that. But so to go back and think about it, your experience with Tizo, you would be a great Pokemon voice actor at this point because that's basically what Tizo was, right?
Yes. Oh my God. Thank you. That's such a compliment. I appreciate that.
Yes. Because you had to, the game is already not in English, but other characters' dialogue lines translate directly to English, whereas Tizo speaks a non-English language to the other characters.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So How do you get in character for a little impy boy?
Oh my gosh. I tend to find my characters through physicality. So with Tizo, it was like my little hands, kind of like up up by my chest, like doing like the little, I don't even know how to describe this.
T-Rex hands, like, kind
little,
of.
Little T-Rex, like little, yeah, little T-Rex hands. And it, like, I think I had like a huge smile on my face when I was doing most of like Tizo's lines and sort of just like taking on physicalities of like small animals. Like I probably looked like a little bit of a squirrel when I was recording Tizo lines, like,
amazing.
So it was like very toothy, like my front top teeth were probably showing the entire time I was doing Tizo lines. So for me, and I do this in improv too, where I tend to find my characters through a physicality, and then I go like, I make a physicality, and then you're like, okay, who is this character? Why are they holding themselves like this? And I did the same thing with Dusa big time, where it was like my tense the whole time I was recording, like my shoulders up to my ears, like my hands were probably like always like up by my face, like trying to figure out like what I'm supposed to be doing with them next. It was physically very hard to do Dusa. It was also kind of hard to do Tizo because it was definitely like scrunched up. But yeah, there was just like a lot of silly, I think, in there. And it was, I think Darren helped a lot because, like, one, he communicates very well what he's looking for in the character. And two, he like sort of like you can tell very easily what works for him and what doesn't. Like he'll either like laugh or he'll like we'll do like a little banter back and forth. So I think it was particularly easy because Darren was someone that I knew and like was easy for me to read. I don't know if I would have been able to do Tizo or Dusa if I was working with someone who I didn't have like a sense of. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's you created the feel and then did what that feeling would say.
That is the yeah. You are I'm very bad at answering questions concisely. So yeah, that was the exact perfect spark notes for what I was trying to say.
So how did you land the Hades roles?
Great question. Yeah. So because Supergiant knew that I was interested and capable and that they knew they'd worked with me before, basically, and apparently didn't hate it. They sent me when they were first getting everything ready for Hades. They sent me some sides, and they sent me the sides for Dusa, for Artemis, and for Aphrodite. And I remember being like, Dusa, I can do Dusa, no problem. I felt real good about that. I was like, I know exactly what they're looking for. And I think I sent two different takes on Dusa, one like a little more serious, one a little more like plucky, which is the one that eventually got put into the game. And then I felt okay about Artemis, but I was definitely having some, I was definitely just like, oh, this is going to be kind of like, you know, when I auditioned for Pyre and I got cast as only Tizo, but I did a couple of auditions. So I really wasn't expecting to get Artemis or Aphrodite. But I thought I had a better chance to get Artemis than I thought for Aphrodite. I didn't know what Artemis looked like. They didn't have the character art for Artemis, but they had the character art for Dusa and they had the character art for Aphrodite. And I remember just being like, I don't know about Aphrodite. But I remembered that the thing I liked about voice acting was the fact that it always gave me a chance to have more range. So I wasn't there, even though there were a couple times where I was like, don't even bother with Aphrodite. You're not going to get it. Don't waste your time. Don't waste their time. And then it was like, no, we are not doing anything better right now. Like literally just try. And I did. And it turns out they liked my reading on her. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they weren't necessarily looking for someone who was like overly like flirtatious or sexual, and those are two things that I am just not in real life, and that just to the point that I'm like a little uncomfortable being either of those things. And I think that that's like the very typical read on Aphrodite, where she's like just like flirtatious and super like sexy.
Sharon Stone in Basic Instinct, right? Like,
yes. And I think my attempt at her, like, I wasn't doing, I think a lot of other auditions might have been more like vampy. And I focused more on the exact words that were written in her description, which were like confident, like she like had some innuendo, but like, I mostly focused on like the fact that she was very like confident and kind of like toying. So I took it as more like, as opposed to being like, ooh, I'm here to be like sexy. Like, oh, I'm here. Like I'm using, she's more like manipulative and confident and sort of like, oh, you know, more of like a bless your heart little godling. I took that sort of read for her. And it turns out reading the notes that are given to you about an audition is a good idea, because that was more what they were looking for. And when I went into the booth to actually do the recording, I met with Darren and Greg. And Greg was like, this is what we liked about, we played back some of my audition. It was like, this is what we liked. So focus on this. And he never once said the word sexy or anything to do with her personal, like, sexuality or anything along those lines. And I think that helped me be able to do it, because I think the second that you're like, okay, now be like a sexy, confident woman, I would be like, nope, I do Dusa.
It's not so much like,
so
it's the sexuality. She's a naked woman. That's going to be, you know, that's going to convey enough of that, but she's more haughty, flirty as opposed to that. It's like Sarah Michelle Gellar in Cruel Intentions, maybe not quite as evil, but definitely kind of the, I use my sexuality to get what I want, but sexuality isn't what I want. It's the control. It's the power. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. She's more just like, she's pulling the strings, and she knows that she knows how to pull humans' strings from the perspective of their, you know, desire for love. So that's what she is doing. So I was like, I can try confident. Like, it's not like, I guess I did that when I was younger. Like, I played confident roles. I went with that reading. Like, she's not secure, because she is somewhat insecure, right? Like, she gets pretty mad if you choose someone else over her. You know, the gods are also very flawed. But when it's just like her and Zagreus, she knows that she holds all the power, and she relishes in that. Again, the reason I was able to do that role was because there was very good and clear expectations set out from the get-go about what they were looking for. And that was, communicated very clearly.
And this is a more general question about acting, but how do you identify with the character that you don't write? And do you end up feeling a sense of ownership around that character's identity? Because this is definitely something where you have to turn into a person, but you kind of have to believe what you're saying in order for the lines to land. So how does that end up? What is your relationship with a character like Aphrodite build into?
Okay, so here's what I'm going to say about doing voice acting, is that pretty rarely in voice acting, you know, do you have an ability to do any of the writing? You know, you're usually given a script and it's like, stick to the script. And obviously I'd been doing improv, and improv is very different, where improv is basically like writing, directing, and acting all on the spot at the same time. So there was a little bit of a difference there. When it comes to voice acting, I sort of view the character as being a confluence of like at least three different people bringing that character to life. So there's Greg, who wrote the character. There's Jen, who illustrated the character and gives the character the face that everyone sees and, you know, loves, because she's an amazing artist. And then there's the voice actor who comes in. So I definitely feel like I get a little too much credit for those characters when people are like, I love Dusa. Oh my gosh, your storyline about this. And like, I love when people show up and are like, I love Dusa's storyline. And I'm just like, Oh my God, me too. But you should be telling this to Greg because that was Greg's idea totally. Like, I'm so happy I got to give it a voice. But I try to be very clear on my stream or anytime when people are like, I love your character. It's like, thank you so much. I really appreciate you, you know, taking the time to be kind because the world needs more people to take the time to be kind to each other. But I'm also just like, I cannot take any credit for Deuce's storyline. I just read those lines. Like, Greg thought about it. He put it in there. So be sure you reach out to him too. Like, so thrilled to be part of that team that brought her together. But I think a lot of the best parts about Deuce have more to do with her writing than the performance. And that is a little bit me being hard on myself, but it is also a lot of bit true because I had no say on what her story arc would be. So yeah, it's when it comes to voice acting or, you know, really any acting, voice acting specifically, I would say is a trifecta because there's the animation side, there's the writing side, and then there's the performance side. And then other acting, it's, you know, at least the actor who's saying and performing the lines and then the person who wrote those lines. So yeah, any character really is almost, there's almost no character who it's just one person has decided this is what this character is going to be when it comes to acting. It's always a team effort.
Yeah, and I guess it's just, it speaks to the skill and the range that you've developed over the years that you're able to, you look at Aphrodite and Deuce, and there is not a lot in common going on there. And your ability to kind of become either of them and identify with them and relate to them is well, I mean, it takes some effort and takes some skill, but yeah, this is a whole team of people that you work together to make one character feel like a fully realized individual that would do their own things and make their own decisions.
Oh yeah, exactly. It's a, and I feel like as the voice actor, I'm coming in last. Like, Greg is like writing it. He's probably talking to Jen about who this character is. Jen probably does like a couple different drawings of that character. Like, I feel like there's so much that happens like before you even bring a voice actor into it. So I was happy to listen to everything that they had come up with. I mean, it's definitely like, it's really helpful when they're like, this is the character, this is what we're looking for. But then it's also like a little bit of pressure where you're like, well, I hope I can do it. But yeah, it all still being cast as Aphrodite was very weird to me. Funny story is Avalon Penrose, who is the voice of Megara, is a friend of mine in real life. And she also read for Aphrodite. And we both, without saying it to each other, I think we both were like, well, Avalon's going to get cast as Aphrodite. but yeah, anyway, I think it worked out. People seem to like her. People have been very nice to me about saying that they like the performance, and which was weird. I've definitely, through the process of like the game coming out, I was sort of like, maybe I'm just like filler. Maybe they just like, they're still looking for the right Aphrodite. And I'm just kind of doing the voice for now. Like, at no point would I have been surprised if they recast Aphrodite. I would have been very surprised if they recast Deuce, because Deuce is so my wheelhouse. It's not even funny. But yeah, with Aphrodite, I was like, really? Really? But I'm so grateful for the opportunity, because again, it's in such a reminder of exactly why I like voice acting and acting in general, because I have the opportunity. Like, there's no universe where I ever would have auditioned for an Aphrodite character if I were like a face actor. Like, I don't know. It's just, like, it felt good that they even bothered to send me the sides for it. It was like a nice boost of confidence. And then to get cast was like, what? Really? And even though there are those moments of self-doubt, it is like, but I'm doing it. And they're paying me to do it. And they're like, they're sitting with me for hours in a recording booth. And to be fair, like, Darren did have to like work with me on like, okay, now say this word like this, put, you know, like with Aphrodite, it was a little more of a struggle for me, but it wasn't impossible. And it was like, hey, if maybe I practice my voice acting stuff more, it'll come easier to me. Like, I eventually got there with everything. But yeah, much like playing video games, the more you practice, the better you get, it turns out. So I think that answered your question. And then a couple more.
It did. And I wanted to make sure that we gave some credit to Aphrodite, because you get asked a ton about Dusa, because it's such an iconic and amazing character, and everybody loves her, and, you know, there are all the Hades servers have an icon of Dusa as the icon for the server or some kind of emotes. But Aphrodite, like, that's a well-acted character that I think people are often surprised to know that's the same voice. And, you know, I think you did a great job executing. I would have liked to hear your Artemis, but Jamie Landrum did such an amazing job as Artemis.
Oh my God. She's so good. She's so talented. Like, the fact that Jamie is both Nyx and Artemis is wild. Like, I have sat there and, like, tried to hear her doing both of them, and it's actually hard. Another one is Marin, who does Athena and Electo and Tisiphone. That's all the same voice actor. It's all the same voice actor. Wow. It's wild. I don't, like, those characters aren't necessarily, like, terribly different from each other. Well, I guess Athena is pretty different from Electo or Tisiphone, but, like, yeah, the amount of, like, talent that people have in this game is wild. But no, I like Artemis, like, I think I definitely brought, like, angsty to it, but Jamie's is way more polished. Like, she's so, like, and it makes sense because I think she also voiced May in Pyre. And I feel like I'm like, okay, Artemis and May kind of, like, I can see those characters.
I get the vibe.
Like, that seems, yeah, I get that vibe for sure. Jamie's so good. She's such a talented actress with, like, a really beautiful voice. So yeah, I have my audition saved somewhere. Maybe I'll go back and listen to that and have, like, a little laugh to myself. But yeah, auditioning is always kind of weird. But it's hard not to, like, beat yourself up a little bit over an audition. Like, the thing about voice auditions is, like, now they're all done remotely. Like, I'm not, like, going to a studio to go in and do an audition. Like, a lot of the acting world has changed since I did it when I was a kid, because now everybody is doing self-tapes. That didn't exist when I was, like, 14, 15. Like, you had to go into a place. They had, like, a video camera with, like, a VHS tape in it. And they record. That's how they recorded you doing it. And now everybody has, you know, cameras on their phones, and, like, it's so much harder to do that as opposed to just going into a room, doing your thing, getting it done. If it was good, great. If it wasn't good, sorry, too bad, but you move on regardless. So yeah, doing, like, voice auditions, like, sometimes I'll spend, like, many, many hours on, like, two lines just because I'm like, no, that wasn't quite right. No. And, like, doing, like, the self-directing thing.
I can see how Dusa is in your wheelhouse.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that a lot.
Well, so she's a little ball of anxiety. And, you know, you recorded this well before that pandemic started, but it's been a year where it would have been a lot easier to get in character for Dusa. Yeah, tell us about her. I imagine that you saw this character and right away you were like, it me.
Yeah. She was just like, Dusa actually changed a little bit. I don't know how much Greg had in mind for her when they first came up with the character, when I first auditioned for her. Because when I first auditioned for her, she was more like, they were like, she's kind of like an American 16-year-old. Like, she has a, like, obvious, like, big old crush on Zagreus. And she gets flustered very, very easily. And she's very, like, shy. And I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, I got this. And then she turned into so much more than that. But I'm really glad it wasn't like, great, so she's this shy little character, flustered easily. And then that kind of morphed into like, oh, she has anxiety and she's the custodian of like the house of, I mean, she always was the custodian. She was like, you know, we knew that. But like they slowly and organically like grew her character into something so much more than what I like initially auditioned for. So I think because we started small and then grew her, it made my life a whole lot easier. And it was very organic. And yeah, so the lines that I read for the audition were like the line about like Dusa, where she was like, Prince, your dad is pretty steamed about something, I think. Maybe I could maybe I could like tell him you're not here. I remember reading that line. And just like, I think, okay, what was the comparison they made? They're like, they kind of were like, think like Rachel Lee Cook from She's All That, like sort of nerdy, sort of awkward. And so now you can see, like, now that you've played the whole game, it, like, you get to see like her character arc, you get to see her grow. And none of that felt like forced or like they're trying to jam something in there. It was artificial. All like, yeah, it wasn't artificial. It was so organic. It was like, okay, where's this stemming from? It's stemming from anxiety. What, where else? Like, if that's true, if she's an anxious character who has a crush, she also has a job. How is she anxious in her job? Like, so yeah, I thought her, just like her character throughout the whole game was so well written and made so much sense. And like you said, it wasn't artificial.
And this is going to be a little bit of a spoiler tag here for people that haven't reached the end of Deuce's story arc. Not the Zagreus relationship, but just her around the house. Her internal storyline was about crunch and internal pressure and feeling so hard, like feeling so badly that she had to do everything, that she was too hasty and she was not giving herself enough credit. And Nyx seemed cold-blooded about it at first, but you realize it was an extreme form of a wake-up call. And it was so amazing to see Deuce come back and feel a little bit more confident, a little bit more stable, and just her the tone of her voice after that was, I imagine you nudged a little bit, right?
Yeah, it was that was really interesting for me to come across in like the booth where I was like, what happens? What do you mean she gets fired? I love that, especially like I really like first, this is me just like being so excited about Greg's writing. I remember just thinking like, oh my God, they're taking things that they're like seeing in the world and probably dealing with in their own office, and they're able to organically like put that into their game. Because I think that they wrote all of that before, like, I mean, I know crunch has always been a topic in video games, especially like the last couple of years. And it was just like, it's just like it for me, an example of really good writing where it's like, write what you know, but also manage to put it into like Greek, a video game about Greek mythology.
And make it a floating snake head.
Mm-hmm. A little floating gorgon head.
And it's fascinating that Hades is a game about Greek mythology, and it turns out to just be like Office Space in a lot of ways.
Oh my God, I've never... Office Space, that's so funny. Yeah. Yeah, it's like a workplace dating simulator also.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was like, I don't think I even realized that my voice was changing when I read those lines. One, because I did like four different sessions over like 2 years. And two, it was just like, this is what's happening now. Like Darren would be like, okay, like I'm going to read in this line. This is kind of what's going on. And yeah, Deuce had a chance to like grow up a little bit, to be more find herself. And you're right, Nyx did give her this like wake up call, and it seemed very like cold, and it seemed like Nyx was like a bad guy. But in reality, it would have been better if Nyx was like, hey girl, you're working too much.
But nothing was getting through to Deuce. Like, it's Deuce was like, no, but I have to do everything. And then Nick's like, stop, take a vacation. You don't know it's a vacation, but chill for a second and then we'll figure it out.
I know. And that's what a concept, right? That can only happen in a fantasy game, right? I don't think that was planned from Deuce's early like the imagination, the imagining of Deuce in the beginning. I don't think there's any way Greg could have known like, okay, we're going to start off with this like giddy, like teenage, like Gorgon head. And then she's going to evolve into, you know, commentary on crunch or on like workplace, like what's healthy in a workplace, work-life balance. So yeah, it's just such a testament to like good writing when those sorts of things like pop in so organically. But yeah, Dusa works so hard. And it's a good point to make. Like you can't do good work if you're doing too much work. Like there is a limit. There are diminishing returns. And it just really seems like in today's day and age, where people talk about like, I work 60 hours a week and I barely slept. It's like, that's bad. That's not good. I don't understand why any employer would want employees who don't sleep or who try to multitask and then end up not getting anything done. So that was such like a fun little surprise in Deuce's story. That I don't think anybody really saw coming, and people really didn't see it coming, because the number of people who've reached out to me and been like, Dusa got fired, Dusa's gone, like I've gotten so many DMs about that. It's very funny, like through Twitch and also through just like Twitter and Discord, and I'm like, just keep playing, just keep playing, it's fine.
Yeah, it's definitely a big turning point story wise where people just roll and they're like, what happened to Dusa? Why would they do that to Dusa? There's a good ending here.
Mm-hmm. It's okay. Yeah, keep going.
Yes.
Keep going, everyone.
Speaking of keep going, you, besides being in the game, you've been streaming it. And it's been going well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us what that's been like. What prompted that and how has it been going for you?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's very fun. If you had asked me a year ago... if I could ever be found streaming video games on Twitch, I would have said, no, of course not. Why would I do that? But it certainly has been a year, hasn't it? So basically it started with my husband Mikey was just in Discord in the Supergiant Discord. And when the pandemic started and everyone was at home, he was like, you should stream the game and like, I'll, you know, like say something on Discord or maybe a couple people will watch, it'll be fun. Because a lot of people in the Discord at that time were people who did beta testing or, you know, QA or just really liked the game. And he was like, it'd be kind of cool, like what else are you doing? And I was like, all right, fine. And so the two of us would actually kind of stream together, and it was very like loosey-goosey. And I still don't think I had like beaten Hades at that point yet. But it was mostly just kind of something to do. And I never really got like people, it was mostly just people from Discord popping in being like, oh, hi. And maybe a couple friends. And then I did that for a little bit with no, like maybe like a month and a half. I did that back in like March and April. And then the world got bad. I mean, it didn't get bad. It was just sort of the cover was pulled off. And it was really hard to accept that. Basically, I just got to the point where I was like, I should be focusing my time and energy on other things. And I felt a little weird about like being like, I'm going to play a video game online when people are marching in the streets for social and racial justice. And so I took some time off from like personal endeavors to try to be a better person of the world and educate myself more on what was going on. And I just I thought it was kind of like, yeah, the world doesn't need you to stream video games right now. Maybe don't make it about you for a little bit. So I took some time off of that. And just tried to be like more present in the world and more cognizant of what was going on. And that's something I'm still working on to this day. That's like not something I'll ever be done with. But yeah, I just needed to take time to like recalibrate my purpose in the world. And also I didn't want to be streaming. And like, it just felt like, oh, okay, that's not what the world needs right now. I refocused some of my energies, and then when 1.0 came out, I was, again, just sort of in a funk of, like, I'm not doing anything for me. right now. I didn't have like a creative outlet. I wasn't being great to myself in terms of like mental health. And I did need like a little bit of an escape. And I was like, whatever, I'll try streaming again. I missed being social. I missed performing. And when I streamed, it's one of the few things that actually like maintains my attention on one task for a long time. And if you deal with ADHD like I do, it feels so nice to just be able to do one thing and not get distracted 20 times while doing it. So I was like, okay, I'll start streaming. And I wasn't like promoting it in any big way. Like a couple people would post about it on like Discord or whatever. And I even in my like Twitch like titles, it was usually just like some vague caption, some vague title where it was like streaming Hades and eating pasta, come hang out. And then a couple people found me, and one of those people is Jerds, the person who hosts the Hermes Cup. And I didn't know who he was or that the Hermes Cup existed, but some people in chat did. And so we got to talking, and he invited me to come onto the Hermes Cup and do an interview. And everything with streaming had been going really well. I really liked the people who popped in. Everyone seemed really nice. And also when I first started streaming, I was like, the second someone is mean to me, I am gone. Like the second someone is rude, or like I was really expecting people to not be nearly as nice as and kind and wholesome as they have been. The internet and video games, when those two things collide, haven't necessarily been known for being a recipe for wholesomeness.
That is the understatement of the century. And I imagine that like you just envisioned your chat would be people coming in and be like, how does Deucey get down?
Yeah. Oh, uh-huh. Yep. I was just like, oh, I was a little nervous with like Aphrodite stuff. I was a little like, oh, I don't really know what to expect. And some people have asked some weird questions, but never intent. Like no one's like intentionally been like weird or rude. It's just been like overwhelmingly positive. And the reason I kind of keep going with it is because it's sort of like restoring my faith in humanity, where the people in my chat who show up in my chat are so nice to me, to each other. They're so supportive. People open up. They're vulnerable. Like my stream has evolved into being like, oh, I'm playing Hades and this is what I'm doing, into me occasionally playing Hades and mostly like talking. It's like very much, it's more just chatting with like Hades in the background. And it's felt really good to foster a community of people who are just kind of kind to each other, and a place where people can come and like talk about things that are going on in their life and have people listen and have people want to be supportive, and or just be silly and talk about things that they like. And it just feels like a nice, healthy place to be. And it's not cliquish at all. Like it doesn't, like doing acting and doing improv, as much fun as it is, those are very clicky worlds that bring out a lot of feelings of insecurity. And my stream hasn't been that at all. It's like a really lovely place to be. And I get to play Hades and I get to fangirl over Hades. And I get to be with other people who also fangirl over Hades. And I never would have expected that. And it's very fun. And I'm also very good at Hades. So I imagine it is kind of fun to watch me delete enemies here and there. But yeah, it's mostly talking. It's mostly me at this point kind of just being silly. And eventually I'd like to play some other games. I think I'm going to give the whole streaming thing an actual shot because I like doing it. I am a little nervous about straying outside of Hades because I don't know. It's scary. You know, I don't know what else is out there. And I attribute a lot of like the wholesomeness and the good chat to being to the fact that Supergiant has created this game that has representation and is so beautiful. I think the people who are drawn to Hades and to Supergiant games are generally people who care about things like art and like social justice and representation and like good music. like, I just feel like people who like Hades have good taste. So I want to try streaming other games. I'm a little nervous, but I do have a little more confidence at this point that if someone shows up and is weird or mean or whatever, it's like, one, I can just block them. That's, I'm allowed to do that. It's my space. I can get them right the heck out of there. And two, I have the confidence to like stand up and deal with that. Streaming is weird, but it is kind of cool. And yeah, I think I answered the question.
You did. Well, and your stream, the vibe around there, it's, there's conversations about three topics: Hades, snacks, and mental health. And those are just three wonderful things to connect over. And also your pets, actually. That's a fourth topic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And Craig is a prima donna. And
oh, my gosh.
Being on stream.
I wouldn't be surprised if in a year it was just him on stream and it's just me feeding him snacks and it's only Craig.
I would subscribe to that. I'm already subscribed, but I would renew. And yeah, you've been in a lot of community events. You've been doing infinite podcast interviews. You were on Hermes Cup. You've made connections with Wrist and with Halion, who have both seen some of their own success and their own visibility as well. It's all of this. The 1.0 release was kind of just this crazy thing. Did anyone internally anticipate it? Did you see this coming? How Hades turned into a phenomenon?
No. I mean, I knew it was going to be a good game. Every single thing that Supergiant makes is going to be good. I had no idea it was going to be so, so well known and so well regarded. Like, Hades is the first thing that I've really been a part of that people I know about it, not just because I've told them about it. Does that make sense? Where it's like, I've had, like,
it's culturally relevant.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, I've had a number of people reach out to me, like people I know but not like super well that I'm talking to them every day, reach out to me and say like, I've been playing Hades and I just saw your name come up on the credits. Like, oh my God, congratulations. That's amazing. And so many other things that I've done. The only reason people know about them is because I'm like, hey, I'm doing an improv show. Maybe you come to my improv show or whatever. So yeah, this was the first time that's actually happened. I think Supergiant absolutely deserves it. I do think they deserve it for pretty much all of their games. So it's not surprising that it happened. I didn't know that it was going to happen. I don't know how to like really describe it, because I think it deserves all the acclaim it's getting. It's just that there are often things that are created that, you know, it's just an indie game and a lot of people don't have access to indie games or hear about indie games for whatever reason.
Not every good thing gets appreciated or reaches a level of cultural visibility that it deserves. And Hades became kind of the thing where there was a week or two in gaming when it first came out where it didn't matter what sphere of the social universe you were in, everyone was talking about this one thing. And it's got to be pretty cool to be a part of it. And you look at all the dedicated Hades content creators, Jollis, Paul, and Haley, and their YouTube subs like quintupled or something crazy like that. You know, and your visibility as well, just in general as a person, it's a thing.
Yeah, it's bizarre. Like, people, we were talking about this earlier, but people have like Googled my name. I'm like, what? Okay. And it's not just like a landlord who's Googling my name to make sure they're not renting to a degenerate. It's like people are like, who is this Courtney Vanez character? So that's bizarre in its own way. But it's, I mean, it's been great. And it's funny because, like I said, it's not like, it wasn't me just going like, 1.0 is out, I will start streaming the game. I had like 1.0 came out, and within that week I had like Mikey, my husband, and then a couple friends were like, hey, are you gonna stream ever again? Because like, if you're gonna stream ever again, like right now is probably a pretty good time to do that because people are really into Hades. And so I was sort of like, I've been thinking about it, so maybe I'll do it. And it has gone well. Like, I pretty much every single stream I do, I stream like probably like three times a week usually. Like at least one person pops in and they're just like, hi, I saw that you were the voice of Dusa and Aphrodite. I just want to let you know, like, I think that's amazing, or like, you did a great job. So people are still like finding me, and it's like very, it's very flattering that people take the time to come into my stream and say something very nice. I appreciate that very much. But yeah, it's just, it's pretty wild, I guess.
Surreal.
Yeah, it's surreal for sure. It's also interesting because it's this form of like a kind of internet fame, you know. It's not like if I go to a grocery store, people are going to be like, "Oh my god, it's the voice of Dooza." So it's this very like disconnected form of like notoriety, I guess I can call it, where like it doesn't really exist unless I like look at my phone and I'm like, "Oh, hey, someone on Twitch, you know, followed me," or someone on Twitter drew fan art of Dooza. So it's like I don't feel any different necessarily, but it's cool to be part of something that is a bit of a phenomenon. Not yeah. a bit, it's straight up a phenomenon.
And yeah, I mean, you know, the stream numbers are right there. You can see the popularity of the game reflecting in the popularity of your content and content around the game. So, last big question. What does your future look like as far as roles? Well, you kind of alluded to it already. Your role might be twitch.tv/Cortenberry. That might be your next role.
That's what I'm kind of focusing on right now. My New Year's goal this year, resolution, if you will, was to have a better, like more polished stream. One, because I like doing it and I think I'm kind of good at it. And yeah, I think that's what I want to do for now. So right now, my focus is very much on my stream. I'm hoping to make it, you know, better, more polished, a little more like professional. Maybe I'll try to become a partner at some point. yeah, so that's kind of the goal. And my approach to that is very just like I'll psych myself out sometimes where I'm like, oh my gosh, what if you apply to be partner and they don't want to, and they don't accept your application? And it's like, okay, well, worst case scenario is I just keep doing what I'm doing and I like what I'm doing now. Yeah, so I'm just trying to take it day by day. My goal isn't to become like a big famous streamer. My goal is just to be good at streaming and to continue to enjoy myself. And much like I was talking about earlier with my acting and how I stopped acting in like late high school, if it stops being fun, I'm not gonna do it anymore. Like if it becomes, you know, too much of a burden, or if, you know, for whatever, not too much of a burden, I don't want it, but if it like, for whatever reason, if it stops being fun, then I'm not going to do it. Cause I imagine if I'm not having fun, it's not going to be fun to watch. And that's okay. Like this doesn't have to be like my forever thing. This doesn't need to be like my profession. And I think part of the reason why it has been successful is because while I'm doing it, I really am just doing it because it's fun to do. And that's really helped me kind of put a lot of other life things into perspective where, it's if it makes me miserable or if I'm not enjoying it, like, is it still worth doing? In a creative sense, I mean, like I realize that not every job that you have is going to be, the most fun thing you do in the world, but this is, you know, it's content creation. So you can't like try and create content if you're not enjoying it. So yeah, for now it's just a matter of focusing on that. And I think it's going to go well. I think it's going to go well in terms of, like me continuing to have fun and me enjoying the people in chat. And that's all I care about right now. And I want to make sure that the people who come into my chat and are watching my stream, get the best experience possible, because I wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't for them. If, you know, if they weren't there, I would just be playing Hades by myself, which is all well and good. But yeah.
It doesn't scratch the same social issues. And, you know, right. If we think back at the course of this entire interview, really your focus was, if this doesn't add value to my life in a positive way for my mental health in addition to my bank account, like, it's not worth doing. You moved away from acting when you were in high school because it wasn't fun anymore and it wasn't the right thing for you. You moved away from your desk job because, I mean, I doubt that was ever fun, but it didn't feel like you weren't fulfilled by it anymore, and it didn't feel like the right thing to be doing. And now what you're moving towards is what feels like the right thing to be doing. So,
oh my God, you are so much better at answering these questions than I am.
Well, I wrote the questions, yes. And it's a lot easier. You provide the information. I can synthesize that together. But yeah, you think about it, it makes a lot of sense that you follow your heart. That's the most important thing. And that's what your characters would do. So I'm glad you're doing it, too.
No, yeah. No, I'm glad, too. I'm really grateful to have it. It has made this pandemic and this very hard and weird year a lot more bearable to me. And what started off what it felt like a very big waste of a year has turned into something really positive, and I'm eternally grateful for that. And I feel very, very privileged to be able to do this to begin with, and to have people who are willing to give me the time of day. It's been like a really humbling experience that I'm very grateful for.
Well, this has been a delight. Thank you so much for spending the time here. But I have some lightning round questions. We do have to talk about questions. All right. All right. Yeah, favorite aspect?
Aspect of Chiron on the bow.
Okay. Solid. Do you have a build you usually go for?
Yeah, I usually go for a low tolerance build. It's, yeah, just getting that Aphrodite on my attack, getting a Dionysus on my special, and then just doing a whole bunch of deleting around that. Just deleting foes. Delete, delete, delete. Dionysus is probably my favorite character. Like, I'm always happy to see a Dionysus boon. In terms of, like, it's, yeah, okay, that's my low tolerance.
And
my
in terms of voice acting, by the way, Cyril Namati is Dionysus.
Oh my god.
I love it. Did you see the video he posted of how he gets into character?
Yes, so, I love it so much. Oh my god. So, what a delightful human being Cyrus is. And his characters are so good, and the voices are so rich. Yeah. Oh, love it.
Yeah. Incredible. So, favorite character, is it Dionysus or is there somebody else?
Okay. Favorite character is one I've always like struggled to answer because it's like, well, what do you mean? In terms of getting boons, I love seeing Dionysus. Love, love, love. Never sad to see a Dionysus boon because he pretty much always has something that will help me. But also, I love Meg. Maybe I'm a little biased because I'm friends with her in real life. But I think her character is cool. I think the art is cool. I love her boss battle. It took me forever when I first started playing the game. It took me forever in early access to beat Meg. So that was like another thing. It was just finally being like, yes, I finally beat this boss. Dionysus in terms of boons and then character. I'll go with Meg. We'll say Meg. That might change, but she's a great character. So
yeah, she is our most frequent answer for this question on this show.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, for a bunch of different reasons, but it always comes back to Meg. Yes.
Yeah.
Most disliked enemy.
Oh, I'm a satyr hater. Hashtag satyr hater. They are so gross. So first of all, like, they do a lot of damage. It's really annoying. You have to go to the fountain after you get hit by them. It takes so much to kill them. Like, so much. Like, they have so much HP. And finally, if you think about it, they're basically just hawking loogies on you.
They're and gross.
My biggest pet peeve in the world is spitting. Like, I cannot, if I see someone spit, like, you just look different to me. And there's a difference between, like, oh my gosh, I'm running and I have that, like, weird runner spit and I have to gently, like, spit it out somewhere. And someone who's just, like, walking on the street and goes, like, and, like, spits. Like, it's, and I'm, like, I can be a gross person. Like, I can be, you know, like, I don't mind, like, gross things. I think they're funny. I like blue humor. But spitting is so gross. So satyrs are my least favorite enemy. Hashtag satyr hater.
Good answer. Satyrs always come up in this conversation. People are usually like, I could say satyr, but I'm going to pick this other thing. I'm glad that you stuck with your gut. Though also,
yeah,
you play Chiron. I doubt you're a big fan of the shields either.
Oh, the great shields. Oh, my God. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, no, they are real annoying. But I feel like they're also like when I'm setting up my build, I'm usually considering them. I'm able to consider them into my build where I'm like, ooh, okay, maybe I'll take Artemis's cast because it'll go through like that actually like pierces their stuff. Or I try and get some kind of like lightning bolt or Dionysus. Like if I can get like a good dash, that's really helpful. But like I'm always aware that Dionysus can help me take them out or some kind of like lightning thing from Zeus. So the great shields, because I've like kind of been able to figure out this like workaround with them, like, yeah, they can be annoying, but they do have weaknesses that I can factor into my build. Satyrs are just gross.
Yeah. It's true. They are just gross. Favorite games that are not 80s?
Ooh, good question. Last of Us. I feel like I'm one of the few people who thought Last of Us 2 was really good.
I mean, it won Game of the Year. A lot of people liked it. I understand it's controversial that a masterpiece of writing might be a good game, but, like, mm-hmm. it's a good game.
Yeah. Last of Us 1 is still one of my, like, favorite, most emotional games that I've, like, ever played, and I think about it often. So yeah, Last of Us, Myst is a special one in my heart. It was one of the first games I ever played. I've gone on a podcast and got to talk about it for like a whole hour. Animal Crossing got me through the first part of the pandemic. So for that, I will be eternally grateful. I haven't touched it in months, but maybe I should. What other games do I really love? The Last Guardian is another game that I love and made me cry. And a lot of that had to do with the big dog creature reminded me of my cat who was dying at the time, which is sad, but also like so sweet. It's his most beautiful game. So Portal 2. Portal 2 is another game I really love.
Good answer. Favorite villager?
None. They're all pests.
You don't like any of your villagers?
I don't know. They're fine. They're all like so needy. And I'm just like, I'm not here for you, my dude. I'm trying to decorate my island.
I just like the lazy villagers because all they want is snacks. And I'm like, you know what? I feel that. I'm there for that.
I do like that. It was never my favorite. Like the villagers have just never been my favorite part of Animal Crossing. I'm sort of just like, get out of my way. I'm trying to build something. Like,
so you want Sim City. You don't want Animal Crossing.
You know what? Yeah, you're not wrong. I don't know. It's also been a long time since I've played, so I'm sure. I don't know. I like the little people who come and visit, just like, ooh, hey, it's nighttime, and I'm the bug guy. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll get you some bugs.
And Celeste, cool, she just wants to look at the stars.
She's yeah. Awesome. Okay, that's true. Yeah, that's nice. But like, I don't know. I feel like there's the cow who's like, oh, I'm kind of judgy and fashionable. I'm like, get out of here. Take your judginess out of here. I can't deal with your judginess right now, cow. Yeah, that's my... I guess I am more of a sim person. I just want to build and decorate.
Nothing wrong with that. And it's still... Animal Crossing was the game of 2020. Like, that was the game that got the country, if not the world, through the first stage of the pandemic. Yep.
Yeah, that.
And speaking of 2020, finally, last question. Who was the best Twitter follow to match the chaotic energy of 2020? And why is it Avalon Penrose?
Oh, my God. Avalon's the best. She's just so she really puts herself out there. She is so honest and vulnerable and very relatable. But her tweets are so they're so perfect. They're just like. She's so funny. She's so irreverent. She's a great human being. She's not afraid to be herself. And I love that because when I was her age, I was very afraid to be myself, especially in any public sphere. So for that, I'm very happy for her. She makes me want to build like a little time machine and go back to being a couple years younger and being like, it's okay to be yourself online, to be she's very genuine. But man, she is just a walking ball of chaotic energy.
Yes. So also, highlight of her online experience is singing the Meg song from Hercules.
Yes.
So good.
Oh my God, it's so good. I mean, yes, they are two different Megaras. But
very different.
Oh, she's also she's like a trained opera singer. Like she has opera trained. Like she went on the Gong Show. You can find this clip. It's amazing. She went on the Gong Show and sings opera while getting like pies and stuff thrown in her face. She is an incredibly talented performer, like wildly, wildly talented. And she's going to go on to do like really great things. So she is definitely a person to watch.
Looking up that clip after the show. So thank you so much for coming on, Courtney. Where can we find you if we want to chat, plug your Twitch channel, and any shout outs you have you want to share?
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, feel free if you like watching people play Hades. I do that on Twitch, twitch.tv/Cortenberry. You can follow me on Twitter. I tweet some things sometimes. It's usually tweets about when I'm about to stream, but sometimes it's other things too. So my Twitter is C Vinays, C for Courtney, Vinays for the spelling of my last name, V-I-N-E-Y-S. And yeah, and as far as shout outs, I would just say, if you like Hades, go play Pyre. That's all I got to say on that.
Yeah, it's a great game. Well, thank you so much again for coming on. Lovely chat with you. Really looking forward to seeing your future as, you know, Twitch personality. Cortenberry.
Oh my gosh. Well, hey, thanks so much for having me.
Of course, yes. We are blessed to have all this content. So, listeners, hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And until next week, we'll see you in hell.